evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, July 22, 2020. Officials from Uganda and South Sudan are involved in smuggling timber through porous border points.
Most of these things are done illegally. Now, recently, they have made another road from Dili to Meru. Authorities allowed cars to go, especially those who are going from Dale.
And Sudanese officials have imposed a curfew in Darfur.
We are urging people to avoid any forms of gatherings, and they should avoid getting close to places where security has been deployed. I have met with traditional leaders of the two groups, and they are committed to sitting down to resolve this misunderstanding.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Eight people were killed and scores of others injured in a renewed intercommunal fighting this week between two communities in Sudan's West Darfur state. Authorities have imposed a 24-hour curfew in Al-Jinena town, and eyewitnesses say gunshots could still be heard last night in the town. A camp for internally displaced persons was also attacked by armed militia groups, forcing thousands to flee into schools and places of worship. For VOA News, Michael Atid reports from Khartoum.
West Darfur State caretaker military governor Major General Rabi Abdullah Adam issued an order early Monday declaring the 24-hour curfew in Al-Janina town effectively and immediately. A huge joint security force made up of Sudan Armed Forces, police and paramilitary rapid support forces was seen patrolling the town all day in Land Cruiser pickup. Speaking in Arabic shortly after the meeting with traditional leaders in Al-Janina on Tuesday, Adam called on civilians to remain in their homes and avoid any gatherings while the government finds ways to resolve what he calls a misunderstanding.
We are urging people to avoid any forms of gatherings, and they should avoid getting close to places where security has been deployed. I have met with traditional leaders of the two groups, and they are committed to sitting down to resolve this misunderstanding.
Speaking in Arabic to South Sudan in Focus via WhatsApp, Al-Janina resident Abdurrahim Abdullah says after gunfire resumed last night, residents remain indoors today. A militia group killed two people and injured five others, while other armed youth looted several houses, according to Abdullah.
There was a lot of shooting last night. They also conducted house-to-house searches looking for certain people. This process was accompanied by looting, stealing, and beating.
Abdullah says the armed militia also attacked the Abazar IDP camp and exchanged gunfire with police in the camp. He says thousands of families, including women and children, are now sheltering in schools, mosques, while others gathered in an open areas of the town.
Some have joined their relatives in the residential areas. Even residents from neighborhoods that are near to the IDP camps have had to flee their houses and seek refuge in schools and mosques. This is the situation on the ground.
Security forces deployed to patrol the town are concentrated in the downtown area, according to Abdullah. Speaking in Arabic by phone from Al-Janina's Hujaj camp, which hosts nearly 3,000 internally displaced families, IDP Muhammad Arbab says about 1,000 families, mostly women and children, fled the fighting and arrived at the camp over the last 3 days.
There is a need to provide security to IDPs. We are calling on the United Nations and the transitional government to give us protection. It is now the rainy season, and they can no longer go to their farms because they will be targeted. Our lives are in danger.
Several Al-Janina residents say armed militia killed one policeman Sunday night while the officer was returning from his garden. They say the incident then took an ethnic dimension between armed Arabs and the local Masalit tribe. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
A former commissioner of Kangapo County in what was known as Yei River State is accusing officials in neighboring northern Uganda's Moyo district of illegally cutting down trees inside South Sudan. An official from Moyo district says he is aware of illegal logging in South Sudan and accuses government officials from both countries of smuggling timber from South Sudan. For VOA News, Daniel Martin Friday reports from Yei.
Henry Kalasabuni, former commissioner of Kangapo County, says despite the ban on illegal timber and forest logging, dozens of trucks loaded with huge Afcelia Africana logs have crossed into Uganda through Moyo District several times over the past few weeks. According to Kala, apart from the official entry points in Jale and Bamure into Uganda, the illegal loggers are using other newly created routes from Limi to Metu. Kala says leaders from Kajukeji County and Uganda's Moyo District have held several meetings to stop the illegal logging, but the practice continues. In 2018, officials in the former Yei River State held several meetings with their Ugandan counterparts to improve security to put an end to smuggling of timber from South Sudan's Yei, Kajukeji, Morobo and Moyo. Kala accuses some top Moyo district officials of taking advantage of the weak local government in Kajukeji and accepting bribes from Ugandans to let the illegal logging continue. Kala says officials in Moyo district and the border revenue offices were bribed by the loggers to continue with the illegal business in Kangapo area.
Most of these things are done illegally. Now, recently, they have made another road from Dili to Metu. Authorities allowed cars to go, especially those who are going from Dale. That means there is a link between the Uganda district authorities that are using this thing as a source of their revenue, because they are getting money from the loggers, and that's why they don't control. And since these people are paying money to the army units there, then they allow these people to take the logging. We tried our level best to control the situation when we were commissioners there, but still we are not listened to. And as I speak now, people are calling that there is a massive cutting of trees in the region.
Kala is appealing to the Central Equatorial State Government to deploy security forces at the South Sudan-Uganda border crossing areas to shut down the illegal logging business. William Anyama, the local Council 5 chairman for Uganda's Moyo district, confirms illegal forest loggers have been cutting down trees in Kajukeji and transporting the logs from Kajukeji into Moyo district through porous entry points for weeks.
They were carrying the logs from South Sudan to Ugandan pipe via illegal entry in Metu sub-county. The president had stopped cross-border movement because of the disease of COVID-19, but the LDC allowed these loggers to stay in Moyo. And they were living in Moyo, and the truck drivers were moving here with the trailers. So all these were posing threats to the public health safety of the people of Moyo.
Julius Monyega is a former Director General of Agriculture and Forestry in the former Yei River State. He says South Sudan must enact strong environmental protection laws before it is too late.
These people, they used to cross from Uganda and then cross to South Sudan, that is to Jifang Kangapo County. The community there is not benefiting. Patrolling is very essential. Logging should be stopped. Let people respect the orders given by the government. But if the orders are not respected, we are living nowhere because the environment is going to be destroyed.
William Samanzuru, an environmental activist in Uganda's West Nile region, warns rampant illegal logging in South Sudan will affect the citizens of Uganda and South Sudan.
People's livelihoods are directly affected because our weather and ecosystem has been destroyed, and also insecurity in exchange of illegal guns, and we demand an honest leadership that looks into the plights of the people, so that on the table of discussion we are discussing the plights of the two countries' citizens.
South Sudan's laws issued by the then Yei River State government, anyone found guilty of illegal logging faces a sentence of up to 6 months in prison and fines of up to $3,000 amount. No one has ever been convicted of illegal logging in South Sudan, despite reports of its activity for years. For VOA News, I am Daniel Friday Martin in Yei Town, Central Equatorial State.
From Yei, we move to Kenya, where the Kenya Medical Practitioners, Pharmacists and Dentists Union have blamed the Kenyan government's move to hire more doctors from Cuba. The government says the foreign doctors who arrived in the country over the weekend are specialists to help address the shortage of doctors in Kenya. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi, the union says the government's decision has left many Kenyan doctors without a job.
The Kenyan government has been in disagreement with the Kenya Medical Practitioners, Pharmacists and Dentists Union demands that have led to them opting to hire doctors from Cuba, a move the union is opposing. Speaking in Nairobi yesterday, Tuesday, the union's acting secretary general Chibanzi Mwachonda criticized the government for employing 20 more doctors from Cuba who came into the country over the weekend and leaving more than 1,000 Kenyan doctors.
In as much as they are saying it's meant to build capacity, that move is in bad taste. You cannot explain in whatever way how you leave your own people, your own citizens, trained by taxpayers' money, trained by Kenyans, out of employment, and bring foreigners when we have not exhausted our own pool of healthcare workers.
The union proposes that the government should at least hire 50 new doctors for each of the 47 counties in Kenya. Mr. Mwachonda said that with the increased cases of COVID-19 and health workers contracting the virus, there is need to hire more doctors locally.
We have done projections before on the human resource requirement for healthcare workers. We know the focus has been on isolation, bed capacity, but the HR component has not been given the priority that it deserves. We have seen 20 Cuban doctors who are said to be specialists being brought on board. The irony is that it has taken more than 4 months for the government to engage its own local doctors to combat COVID-19.
The government struck a deal to have another batch of Cuban doctors who will work for a period of 6 months after 100 came into the country 2 years ago. Defending the government's move, Health Cabinet Secretary Mutahi Kagwe said that the specialized doctors will go a long way in helping Kenyan doctors manage the COVID-19 spread.
On the matter of the Cuban doctors, the Cuban doctors are being paid like our own doctors. We are not paying any more than we pay our own people, and I would like that very clearly done. It is a small brigade of 20 doctors who have come, specialists in their own area, and their purpose really is just to come and exchange skills with our own doctors. And yes, we are continuing to hire doctors as the situation evolves. We are short of doctors in the ministry, and we are looking at how to increase capacity.
In the year 2018, the Kenyan government received 100 doctors from Cuba, 47 specialists and 53 family physicians who were flown in to address the shortage of doctors in the country that has been experienced for many years. However, security threats have been a concern to most doctors who are deployed to the northern part of the country after Al-Shabaab militia group abducted 2 doctors from Cuba in Mandera on April 12, 2019. Reporting for VOA, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, why is Africa still a drug hub? That story is coming up right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
if you could swap lives for a day, who would you swap with and why?
I'll swap with our finance minister, because I think he's doing a human job and I want to have a feel of what he goes through in a day.
I'll change with my dad because I love him so much. He has been there for us. I mean, like, he has taken us in good schools. He has taken care of us, because for us, our mom is not working. We depend on our dad.
If I was to swap with someone, I feel I admire myself more than anyone in this life, and I feel I'm capable of doing what those people are doing, so I would not swap for any person.
I would like to change position with the president, because I feel it would be nice to give instruction to everyone.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Modou. The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Law enforcement authorities say Africa is still a global illicit drug hub, even as many of the continent's biggest economies have imposed restriction movement to stop the spread of COVID-19. American drug enforcement officials say they are especially concerned about what appears to be the rising incidence of drug use on the continent. Anita Powell reports for VOA from Johannesburg.
Coronavirus lockdowns across Africa have seriously battered formal economies, with economic giant Nigeria losing an estimated $18 billion during its five-week lockdown from March to April, according to data from the International Food Policy Research Institute. But still, says a top American anti-drug official, drugs and other illegal goods are still finding a way through both the continent and to consumers in Africa. In the midst of South Africa's extremely strict lockdown, police seized a consignment of cocaine worth more than $1.8 million. Several of Africa's largest countries imposed travel and economic restrictions in a bid to stop coronavirus, a move that should have also put a damper on the illicit drug trade. Instead, says Heather Merritt, Deputy Assistant Secretary of State for the Bureau of International Narcotics and Law Enforcement Affairs, the traffickers adapted. For example, in recent months, her bureau has seen an increase in illicit online drug trade in Africa and an increase in local drug labs. She also worries that ailing economies could push desperate people into illegal trade.
Some of the emergency funding measures that governments have enacted to respond to the pandemic, or even new influx of foreign assistance to help respond to the pandemic, can create new opportunities, sadly, for corruption. Over the medium to long term, the socioeconomic disruptions we're seeing may lead to increases in criminal activity as some are pushed out of legitimate work due to economic downturns. And we see that illicit economies may be advantaged when there are prolonged supply chain disruptions. So it may create new black markets for goods.
For years, international drug enforcement agencies have seen this continent as a hub for illegal goods, with ports in Kenya, Nigeria, and Tanzania being used to ship drugs to Europe or the U.S. But increasingly, Merritt says, Africa's own appetite for drugs is growing.
Unfortunately, drug use trend in Africa, drug use is rising. The U.N. estimated that 6 million people in Africa abuse opioids, this is in the 2020 report, and that about 1.9% of adults in West Africa are substance use disorder. They're suffering from substance use disorder. And in Nigeria, the numbers are even worse. I learned when I was in Nigeria last fall what a terrible problem it is and how the Buhari administration is incredibly concerned about drug use in the Nigerian population.
A staggering 4.7% of adults in Nigeria, she said, are non-medical users of opioids. And so, Merritt said, even as countries try to stop the virus from moving, the traffickers will still find a way to move their product. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Still in Southern Africa, Malawi national parks and wildlife officials have declared victory after a court sentenced 9 members of a Chinese wildlife trafficking gang to a total of 56 years in prison. Members of the Ling Zhang group were found guilty of trafficking protected animal species and parts, including pangolin, rhino horns, and ivory. The alleged kingpin of the syndicate, Yuan Ling, is due to appear in court on Wednesday. For VOA News, Lamek Masina has the story from Blantyre.
The 9 are part of a 14-member wildlife trafficking gang who Malawian police arrested in May of last year. It includes 2 Malawians and 12 Chinese nationals. Some of the Chinese are already serving 6-year prison terms in the capital, Lilongwe. Passing more sentences Monday, Magistrate Florence Segandiana also ordered the Chinese traffickers to be deported immediately after serving their sentences. Defense lawyer Gilbert Konyongwa told VOA Tuesday he could not say anything because he has yet to see the printed copy of the sentence.
With my clients, we need to go through it and appreciate the basis why the court has given such sentences before we make a decision as whether to leave it at that or to appeal.
Brydon Ikunchedwa is director of Malawi's National Parks and Wildlife Agency. He told VOA via a messaging app that the sentencing is a victory towards the country's efforts in combating wildlife crimes.
We are looking at a foreign syndicate terrorizing Southern Africa and Malawi included. And now those culprits that have been given 11 years, they are already serving another 6 years, which means they will be behind bars for 17 years. I'm sure the cartel now is being dismantled of these criminals.
Kunchedwa says the foreign syndicate has been recruiting locals to take part in wildlife trafficking for the past 10 years. The British-based Environmental Investigation Agency, which campaigns against environmental crimes and abuse, welcomed the sentencing. Its executive director, Mary Rice, told VOA via a messaging app that the ruling shows Malawi has demonstrated that it's possible to get rid of such syndicates within one's own borders.
In this particular case, it's been a very long, hard road. The syndicate was very well connected and did try every which way to get away from the rule of law, but there was tenacity and clear leadership, which demonstrates that you can actually identify and prosecute these individuals.
The alleged kingpin of the syndicate, Yong Huan Ling, was arrested in August of last year following a three-month manhunt. He is expected to appear in court to answer charges of possession of rhino horn, conspiracy, and money laundering. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta.
A painting of Nelson Mandela and Dr. John Garang Dimabior was unveiled in Juba as some South Sudanese in the capital joined the rest of the world to mark the Mandela Day, which is commemorated every July 18. The painting was unveiled at the John Garang International School in Juba. South Sudan's Vice President Rebecca Nyandeng, who is also Garang's widow, says both Nelson Mandela and Garang had many things in common. For VOA News, David Monodanga reports from Juba.
Rebecca Nyandeng, the widow of SPLM founder John Garang, who is also one of South Sudan's vice presidents, unveiled the Mandela Garang mural at Juba's John Garang International School. She said the two former leaders met in Cape Town, South Africa in August 1997. Although Nyandeng does not know what the two men talked about the day they met, she says Garang later named a SPLA battalion after Mandela, which she called a symbol of his respect and admiration for the former South African president.
At the time, my husband was welcomed by the South Africans as a rebel leader. And of course, Mandela was respected globally as a peacemaker. But on this day, at this venue, I have no doubt that the rebel leader and the peacemaker have united once again to watch over us as we celebrate and emulate their powerful legacy.
Mandela and Garang shared many things in common, says Nyandeng, including growing up in cattle camps, being underestimated and marginalized in schools, and drawing strength from those struggles.
Nelson Mandela once said, and I quote, "What counts in life is not the mere fact that we have lived. It is what difference we have made the life of others that will determine the significance of the life we lead." For me, as a revolutionary who was side by side to Dr. John, I feel like the old man is our father who has inspired us, and we know the struggle, how hard and difficult it is. But when you are consistent with your message, and you believe in God, and you believe in yourself, and you believe in what you are doing, the end of the day, you win.
To commemorate Mandela Day last Saturday, the 2019 Mandela Washington Fellowship alumni distributed face masks, hand sanitizers, and hand wash buckets in Gumbo Shirikat to the elderly and other vulnerable people. Kiden Zaida Ibrahim, who represented the fellowship alumni, said Mandela's leadership inspired her to help develop South Sudan. Ibrahim said South Sudan's youth who instigate violence would be more useful if they emulated Mandela and worked to promote peaceful coexistence of all communities in South Sudan.
He was a freedom fighter and he fought for people's right, for equality, for integrity, for accountability, and that's what we need in the country. Mandela fought against the apartheid policy and wanted peace for his people, and in our country we need the same. We may not have apartheid policy, but we have divisions of all sorts in the country and we need peace. So emulating him, or people, young people emulating him, will take us where we want.
Juba resident Mandela Nelson Dennis, who was named after Mandela, joined other youth celebrating Mandela's legacy. He says he is proud of young South Sudanese leaders who are following in Mandela's footsteps and are fighting the COVID-19 pandemic by producing local masks, soaps and hand sanitizers.
He was able to lead only for a term and gave chance for other people. He had a feeling that he has played his part to make his country a better place, and he wanted someone else to pick up from there. If you've been a leader for more than 10 years, give it to your brother. Let him have a chance.
Dennis pointed out that Mandela was able to forgive his enemies even after they imprisoned him for 27 years and mistreated his people in South Africa. He urged South Sudanese to emulate Mandela.
Our country is a very beautiful country. We have a lot of beautiful things. Let's forgive one another. Let's love one another. And let's lift up one another. Let's remember the legacy of the late Nelson Mandela. Let's remember how he lived his life. And let's try our best to live exactly the way he lived his life.
Dennis, who was born on February 11th, 1990, the day Nelson Mandela was released from prison, says he will forever remain grateful to his parents for naming him after the global peacemaker. Nelson Mandela died in December 2013 at the age of 95 in Johannesburg. He was the first elected president of South Africa. Mandela received the Nobel Peace Prize in 1993. For VOA News, I am David Monodanga in Juba.
That's our show for this Wednesday, when I'll leave you with the song Dola Jadid by Silver X.
Kiss record.
That's can be called South Sudanese. For the Jenkini, we don't have a problem. The peace has a bigger money in the ring. The world really alarm, but no less alarm. Publicly, officially.
We've been listening to Silver X with the song Dola Jadid. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers, because there is no cure for the coronavirus. Join us again for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Oh,
Zulu, Nina, Fi Akir, Mahada, Danina.